Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Today's Real Vision Daily Briefing is brought to you by Chintai, your partner in asset tokenization. Licensed and regulated by Singapore's Monetary Authority and powered by the innovative CHEX token, Chintai offers a compliant, one-stop solution for bringing real-world assets on-chain. Chintai enables the tokenization of virtually any asset, from carbon credits to corporate debt, private funds, and real estate, enhancing liquidity and optimizing efficiency for all.
The technology becomes largely invisible and seamless to the end user. I can take a selective store of value within a wider portfolio in a fairly liquid form, very efficiently, to anything, whether it's some high-value whiskey, whether it's a particular supercar that's a one-of-three limited edition, therefore, and this fungible trading of them in a liquid form is the true end game here for tokenization.
With billions of dollars in client deals facilitated, explore how you can take advantage of tokenization by visiting realvision.com/chintai.
If you want to participate in the upside of crypto but don't have the time or the inclination to go truly down the rabbit hole, then Real Vision Crypto might just be for you. New from Real Vision, an RV crypto subscription gets you access to a trading basket complete with risk management strategy, technical analysis updates, private Discord channel, monthly drinks online, and more. And it's led by a team of RV favorites, including Chris Bullock, Jamie Coots, Peter Pinkosoff, and more to be announced soon. So, barely have time to listen to the end of this ad, but want to take part in this crypto cycle without having to dedicate all of your time to figuring it out? Go to realvision.com/RV crypto. That's realvision.com/RV crypto to see if RV crypto is the right fit for you. Is this what stagflation looks like? Welcome to Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Thursday, April 25th, 2024. I'm Ash Bennington, joined today by Tommy Thornton, founder of hedge fund Telemetry. Tommy, it's been too long, man. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me back, Ash. I missed you, and you seem really like ready to go today. You're like, let's go. Let's do this. Let's attack this daily briefing.
I'm fired up, man. It's a Tom Thornton Daily Briefing. Plus, we got a lot to talk about. GDP, PCE, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and Intel reporting right now at the bell.
Yeah, and Microsoft is, I'm just looking at my screens here. Oh, well, I'm Microsoft's up 5%. Intel's down 3%. I'm long. I just bought some Intel today, so oops, bad me. So it's going to be fun. And we have Alphabet coming out as well. And I think the bar is pretty high for these. So let's see what we get.
So let's just jump right in. Tom, some news that you've had some time to digest. Facebook reporting yesterday, selling off on weaker than expected forward guidance. What are your thoughts there? What does it mean more broadly?
Well, I think what happened is that the market got freaked out thinking that they're going back to their wild spending days like they did for the metaverse. And maybe they are. And I think that they had the currency. In other words, their stock was pretty high to be able to come out and say, we're going to spend like crazies again. And it got hit. And the market basically bought it from the lows today. And I think this is a market that people are really still very eager to buy any dip that they get. And April's been a dip. We've had a dip. The NASDAQ, the S&P are both down on the month. You have more stocks down on the month than up. And I think that is sort of telling. You have actually NVIDIA is the sole big leader now for the Mag 7. That stock in itself has done more attribution than any other stock in the market and still is going up.
You're talking now about the attribution to NASDAQ 100, NASDAQ Composite. It's a significant portion of the annualized gains.
Yes. And I think it's like 60% of the year-to-date gains, 34% in the S&P, and NASDAQ, it's, 60%. So it's, it's a lot. And we have Alphabet up 10%, Microsoft up 5%. Amazon's up 3%, so they're jumping on board, and good old Intel down. And again, I bought it today and it's down. So I am probably the only person that's ever been on live with you saying, oops, I screwed up, but it's not a huge position. And, things like that happen. So I'm happy to talk about my losers and often the winners.
And we get to do it here in real time. A little bit here and talk about some of the macro picture. GDP right now, print out today, weaker than expected. Let me just read these numbers to you. Consensus range 1.7 to 2.8. Actual print 1.6. Prior 3.4. Consensus 2.3. A miss and a significant decline from the rate of expansion last quarter.
Yeah, it's not good for the Fed's hope to cut rates. And I think the Fed fund futures pushed out the first rate cut to November, the second to January of 2025. And, you know, a lot of talk about stagflation, and you're probably, what are you drinking there? What is that?
I'm glad you asked, Tommy. It is a double barrel, two tea bag white tea.
Oh, nice. It's lovely. It looks good. I should have had something like that. So stagflation, let's talk about it. First of all, it's growth that's slowing or no growth. And yep, GDP slowing, that's slow growth. You have one thing that's not working though. The labor market typically in stagflation markets tends to see unemployment, and the labor market remains incredibly firm. We have inflation. I've been in the higher for longer camp, and that inflation can stay sticky, and it has. And I'm sort of with Jim Bianco saying that most likely we're going to see inflation start to tick a little higher. And we've seen some of the components, most notably U.S. Gasoline prices have started to tick higher. Nothing necessarily off the charts, but that's going to affect the CPI data. And again, the labor market remains very, very firm. I think the average wages are going to stay high. And I think the Fed, they may or may not cut this year. And if it's November, I think it's the day after the election, which should get some good headlines, so to speak, after the election, which I can't wait till after the election.
So we just don't have to talk about the damn thing anymore?
No, we can talk about how much we hate whoever won. And I think it's on equal sides that people are like, can't we have someone else, a little younger, maybe a little smarter, no tweets, no stumbling, bumbling. I think that would be what people want, but that's what we got. So I'm not going to go any further than that.
Hey, let me ask you this about inflation right now. PCE running at 3.4%, significantly above the 2% Fed target. This is the number that they look at, not CPI. Talk a little bit about what that means. It's almost like that last mile, right? Squeezing out the last 2% above the target. That's been the challenge here.
Yeah, I think that's the issue right now. That one thing that people they look at is they like to look at a six month and a 12-month type rolling period. And the 6 month, well, the 3 month is starting to tick higher because we've seen higher inflation. Across the board, and not in every component, but in the big data, headline data numbers. But they're going to start seeing it in the 6 month start to tick higher. And that's because some of the it's going to roll off from the previous months. And that, I think, is going to be a problem that the market's going to have to deal with. I've been short bonds or basically biased short bonds, and we've seen rates go higher. Today, we had 2024, the highs for basically across the curve. And I think that is going to be an issue. I mean, there's talk that next week's quarterly refunding announcement from Treasury is going to try and squeeze the bond shorts again. I don't think we have necessarily the same bang that's going to happen, because positioning back in October was very offsides. You had people short bonds to the gills and short stocks to the gills. And now you just don't have that. So I think that the real risk is if we start breaking some significant levels on the S&P. And my view on the S&P is if we break 5,000, 4,900, then you're going to start to see the positioning of the CTAs, those large trend following funds, macro funds, start to sell. And that, I think, is going to be a concern because there's supply. And if we have more supply in the market selling, you could see, further downside. And again, the market has cheered every single weak data point. If the jobless claims goes up 10,000 per week, the S&P is up 0.5%. And so I think the data is going to stay strong and the Fed's going to be in a bind. They want to cut. We know that. We know they want to cut rates. Unfortunately, they don't have the data that can justify cutting rates, and need and want are two different things.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Today's Real Vision Daily Briefing is brought to you by Chintai, your partner in asset tokenization. Licensed and regulated by Singapore's Monetary Authority and powered by the innovative CHEX token, Chintai offers a compliant, one-stop solution for bringing real-world assets on-chain. Chintai enables the tokenization of virtually any asset, from carbon credits to corporate debt, private funds, and real estate, enhancing liquidity and optimizing efficiency for all.
The technology becomes largely invisible and seamless to the end user. I can take a selective store of value within a wider portfolio in a fairly liquid form, very efficiently, to anything, whether it's some high-value whiskey, whether it's a particular supercar that's a one-of-three limited edition, therefore in this fungible trading of them in a liquid form, is the true end game here for tokenization.
With billions of dollars in client deals facilitated, explore how you can take advantage of tokenization by visiting realvision.com/chintai.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's get to the core of this dilemma here, Tom. When you see the very weak print on GDP today, suggesting that there are significant challenges with growth, even though labor markets remain strong, is this kind of the, I don't know, you want to call it the inverse Goldilocks scenario, the worst of all possible worlds for the Fed?
Well, listen, the Fed has sort of tried to claim victory in that they've conquered inflation. And let's just remember that inflation at 3% means it's prices are still going up. And that's not necessarily, in my view, conquering inflation. That's what economists see. And they think, we've nailed it. Unfortunately, the consumer is still faced with these higher costs, and as well, so are businesses. So they've had to, try and raise prices and keep their customers. And if you go to a dinner nowadays and you take your family, you get the bill and you just want to, regurgitate because the bill's just out of control. And that's the problem right now. I think that's going to weigh on the consumer. And the longer we go, the consumer's going to pare down their savings and spending ability. And that, I think, is going to be something in 2025 that we'll have to deal with.
Yeah. And, one of the challenges with inflation, we talk about it as a rate, right? Inflation is the rate at which prices are increasing. If you think about speed, I've talked about this before, to give people a sense of just how pernicious this can be in economy. So speed, for example, is the amount of distance you're traveling in a given time, but the amount of time you're traveling matters. In other words, if you're going 60 miles an hour for 3 hours, you're going 180 miles. If you're going at that fast for 10 hours, you're going 600 miles. This is a cumulative erosion of purchasing power, so that, you know, this drip, drip, drip at 3.5%, 1.5% or so above the federal, the Fed's target is just absolutely pernicious to consumers and, as you point out, to businesses.
Yeah, it's going to, everything in this world, we all expect this, you know, immediacy, but it takes time to wear down people's spending. And I think that's going to be a problem. I think higher rates that, I mean, look, we're at a 2-year at 5%. And I think that's, you know, you've got, where's the 4.7 on the 10? That's going to weigh on people's spending habits, and that's going to hit autos, that's going to hit housing, that's going to hit big ticket items and credit card spending as well. I mean, look, I think people have maxed out their credit cards and they're on the buy now, pay later, and they're using that, I've seen, for everyday staples type of things as well, which is just insane to me as well. I mean, we've seen it, but look, everything's okay if the S&P is higher, right? Isn't that the way the market or the way the people look at it?
Yeah, and that obviously speaks to this, to the challenge that we have in our economy with the obsession with those equity prices, the financialization of the U.S. economy, and it being decoupled from consumers. Talk a little bit about that transmission channel that you were talking about, how higher rates translate into significantly and in a nonlinear way in terms of autos, housing, et cetera.
Yeah, if you try and go and you want to buy a house, well, first of all, the problem is, I mean, maybe it's not a problem. Maybe it's a good thing that people are stuck in their houses. They can't necessarily sell their house and transfer their mortgage. They can't, you know, they look at it and think, well, I want to buy a new house. We got to sell ours, which is probably no problem. But the problem is that you have less inventory because people can't sell because they don't want to move, and they can't transfer their mortgage, and they're going to pay X amount more per month, which is meaningful for the amount is meaningful for just about every consumer. It's not like just the low end consumer. Right. The high end is looking at it as well. And I think that is going to really put some sand in the gears of the housing market as well. So I think that's a risk. And listen, there's one thing that people have started to talk about is and John Williams from the Fed talked about it. It's not their base case, but what if the Fed has to, you know, hike rates? And that is something that is not talked about. And it's not my thought right now, but that could start to become an issue if things continue the way they are.
Tom, what does the scenario look like in your view where that becomes a risk?
If you see, and it's possible, if you see prices on CPI, PPI really start to meaningfully move. If you have a 4%, I think that's going to be a problem. The low in the CPI was June last year at 3%. And if you have a year over year, you're going to have year over year comparisons. And if you start to see 4%, maybe even 5%, and I'm just throwing that out there, that would certainly get the Fed's attention. And I think that would spook the living daylights out of the market. And by no means are they going to cut rates like that. And then you're going to start to hear more about the Fed possibly having to hike again. And yeah, that would certainly certainly weigh on the markets and spook everybody. I mean, look, the thing is the Fed typically cuts rates when there's a dislocation in the markets. Let's say the S&P goes down 10, 15%. Bond market dislocates and has a problem, or there's some sort of issue with liquidity in the banking system, or if there is some sort of terrorism or a war or something like that, then the Fed can cut rates, and they have, or pandemic, let's add that into the mix of things. then they can cut rates and do what they need to do. But the markets aren't looking like they're going down right now, especially after hours. And so I think that that's going to be tough for the Fed to do it. And again, they want to cut rates. We've heard that, but they don't have the data. And I think you're going to probably, when the Fed is out of there, you know, you're going to hear from the Fed soon. I don't think they're going to sound fairly hawkish. And I think that is going to weigh on the market sentiment. And it's going to be bad because I think rates can go higher. I certainly think rates could go higher. I think you could have the 10-year over 5% fairly easily with a little bit more stronger data. And that, I think, would start to spook people as well. I think I put on my note today, the highs was like 5.25% on the 5-year or the 2-year, and a little over 5% on the 10-year. That happens, then I think we have a problem that the Fed is going to have to deal with, and it's not what they want to deal with.
We're going to take another quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Yeah, Tom, while you were speaking there, I actually went up to the Fred database. This is the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank. An index, consumer price index for all urban consumers. This is all items in U.S. cities on average from April of 2020 to April of 2024, the last available data, which is actually last month, I guess. And the aggregate price level change has been approximately 122%, well, 122% of where it was. So in other words, a 22% rise, which is correlated to a 22% decline in purchasing power. I mean, this is 4 years.
Yeah, and that's, that's what economists and market participants don't really, you know, they think, oh, well, inflation's come down. Right. Politicians do this as well. Incumbent politicians do this as well. Inflation's come way down, and it has. That's, again, the rate of change in prices. But, you know, we really need, you know, deflation would be nice. You know, it's funny because I'm...
Well, careful, careful what you wish for, Tom.
I know. True. I'm long a bunch of Chinese tech. I'm long Alibaba, Baidu, KWeb, FXI, and there's been deflation in China, and now we're starting to see a little bit of that reverse. So I'm not necessarily all that negative on everything out there in the world. I do think that these are undervalued. They're trading at stupid multiples, and some of them have really pretty good AI futures to them. And so I'm trying to look for things that are out of favor. And just as I was on, I think I was on with you in December, and I was telling everybody how I was buying energy stocks. And I looked back at the comments and, you know, oh my God, why would you buy energy stocks? And then Q1, it was the best performing sector, even better than the S&P, the tech sector, all the sectors in the S&P. So I was pretty happy with that. I did, you know, take some profits on those, and I'm looking to buy back energy stocks if they would certainly dip for me, and hopefully that happens soon.
All right, talking of stocks here, I wanted to just read through this. I'm going to read this report. This is from CNBC about Alphabet earnings. Alphabet reported earnings after the bell. Here are the results. Earnings per share, $1.89. That may not compare with $1.51 per share expected by LSEG. Revenue, on the revenue line, it looks like $80.5 billion. And YouTube advertising revenue, $7.75 billion expected, according to Street Account. Any thoughts on these numbers, Tom? Are you following this closely?
Well, I purposely did nothing on these. I think that it's also, I mean, I just got pinged. Google's offering a dividend, or Alphabet's offering a dividend. I think that's new. So people will jump into that. You know, Alphabet was down almost 10% the last two quarters in a row after earnings. So I think you had some skepticism there. They might be a little bit more cautious on spending than Meta. And I think that they're going to be the outright winner when it comes to AI. And not necessarily, look, I think we're in the picks and shovels stage with NVIDIA. But when it comes to monetizing it, I think that Alphabet will be the clear winner. So I was hoping it would go down because I would like to buy it, but I'm not going to get my wish. And I'm not chasing it here.
What makes you think that Alphabet is going to be the clear winner on AI?
They've been the clear winner on search by far. So I think that they have the power to monetize search, and I think they'll have the power to monetize AI and other forms that they're going to do. I mean, they will do it with YouTube. They'll do it with across the board with all their different verticals that they're in. So I think that they proved it with search, and they may do it by offering it for a cheaper price and or for free. And they'll make money from it in some ways, like they do with search. And I think that's the risk for some of the others, the Microsofts and others like that, that want to, you know, have some sort of monthly subscription, which I don't think the Microsoft monthly subscription for Copilot or something, it is going that well. And I don't know, I'm not spending $30 for it a month. It doesn't seem like I need it.
Yeah, talking of Microsoft, also from CNBC, Microsoft shares rose 5% in extended trading on Thursday after the software maker issued fiscal third quarter results that outdid Wall Street's expectation. Here's how the company did in comparison with the consensus from LSEG. Earnings per share, $2.94 versus $2.82 expected. Revenue, $61.86 versus $60.8 billion expected. So a beat
again. These are the two companies that can pull a lot of different levers and report whatever they want, and they have so many different places that they can turn up the juice on it, and they did. And I'm not as thrilled. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers and gone through everything, but I'm more excited about Alphabet of what's happened there. Again, I'm not in it. I wish I was, but I wanted it a little lower, and I'm not going to get that. And I'll be patient waiting for my price. It looks like Intel is S-ing the bed right now. And I bought it at 35. It's at 32. And so that will be my dilemma tomorrow to go through that. That one's beat down to living hell. So I'm wrong there. I like talking about when I'm wrong on things. Sometimes I get therapy out of it. Western Digital is down as well. Oh, and that's semi name that I think is kind of interesting down. So Tesla's up for no reason after hours. I have my after hours stuff right here. So I kind of look at it. And we've had some fun, Ash, in the past looking at after hours. And we were joking in the beginning about the pandemic when GME was just going ballistic on the upside. I'm just watching and just we were laughing at it. That was so fun.
Yeah, we sure were. That was obviously kind of the best of times, the worst of times, terrible time for the world, but we definitely had fun on the show. I feel like it was just because we were just all locked inside. It was the only thing there was to do was to stare at prices on a screen and then to come on camera at like 4 o'clock and talk about them.
Yeah, I think we used to do together live interviews together on Real Vision, and now everything seems still remote, and I like it. I like doing all the remote stuff, and because it's live, and you're seeing things that are happening in real time. And I always talk about what's going on in the markets because I'm just a market junkie, as I'm known.
Talking of which, we're having so much fun here. I almost forgot to show this clip, a conversation with Peter Pinkosoff, a founder of Investment Charts, talking about some of the issues we've been covering here, Google, Microsoft, et cetera. Let's take a look at that clip.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of a snapback, but we've only retraced, 20, 30% of that move. So I think that does speak volumes to what kind of what's going on from a technical picture. So I'm bull biased on the S&P versus that, you know, the exact level is 49.50 on the S&P cash. I would be leaning bullish against that as long as interest rates are holding a little bit lower. And I do believe that is where a lot of the next move will be driven by, if we're going to start to see the bonds start to hold up here. If this second leg up in inflation was just, you know, a seasonal tick, which very much looks to be the case. We're looking at, you know, tech earnings, just abysmal reaction-wise, not necessarily top-line numbers, but looks like we're still going to see more layoffs, Google, Microsoft, et cetera. So, I don't know if that unemployment picture is going to really clear up soon, and you could start to see the deflation start to come in along with weaker unemployment numbers.
Peter Pinkosov on Real Vision Crypto. By the way, I should say, after that, he continues on to talk about Bitcoin, talking of which, today marks the official launch of Real Vision Crypto, a new service designed to be an on-ramp to digital assets for people who want actionable research, but don't want to go from zero to pro crypto. Right now, special introductory pricing to join Real Vision Crypto today for a special limited time offer. You can go and check it out at realvision.com/RVC. That's realvision.com/RVC. Tom, to come back to the points that Peter made about the equity markets more broadly and tech more specifically, what are your thoughts?
Well, look, the leaders are still going higher for the most part, most of them today and after hours they are. But look, I think his issue that if we break 40 or if we get to 49.50, I think that's going to be a trigger sale for the CTAs. And I think we have supply and I think more people will be inclined to sell making new lows. And I don't think that will be received that well. So I'm a little bit more bearish than he is. I think if rates go higher, which I think they can, I think that's going to start to weigh on the equity markets. I mean, he may think that, there's a lot of people that think that it doesn't really matter for some of these mega cap that rates are higher. I think it will start to matter.
Yeah, you have to imagine at some point that DCA catches up with you, right?
Yeah. I mean, Elon Musk said, you know, one of the problems at selling cars is higher rates, and we've got higher rates. So I think it's tough for him to sell cars.
Hey, speaking of which, we've got a question from Paul English, one of our regular viewers here at Real Vision Daily Briefing, who wants to know, Paul. Tommy, what do you think of the positive response to Tesla earnings?
I don't think it was a positive response to Tesla earnings at all. The earnings, if you look at the fundamentals, they're god-awful, and they're not going to get better for quarters to come. The positive response was to the hopes and dreams that Elon Musk spewed out that people bought. And they think that robo-taxis are coming. And if robo-taxis are coming, I will say that there's one thing that will matter, that if there are robo-taxis and they're coming. And it's even more so than approval, regulatory approval. It's when Elon Musk or whoever, General Motors or, well, actually, I'm not going to say General Motors, but when they say that we will insure, we'll take the liability for your robo-taxi. Because it's our software and we will stand behind it. Others like Waymo have, Cruise has, which GM, Mercedes is as well. They have a further, they have a robo, not a robo taxi, but an autopilot. But look, I think that people love when Elon Musk talks about these dreams. You know, they're going to have robots for sale next year. Good effing luck. That's not happening. People think that the Model 2 is still on. That's not happening. I think Dan Ives told one of my friends that that they fired all the Model 2 engineers, and they're going to come out with cheaper cars. They've had cheaper cars all year. They keep making their cars cheaper by lowering the price and taking parts off of it. So they're going to do that with their Model 3, and they're going to make those cars, you know, maybe smaller batteries, which will save them money. Stuff like that that's going to happen. But I think people just bought into the whole hopes and dreams and doing an Uber-like app. I mean, that's not going to move the needle. Selling more cars moves the needle. It's 95% of their business selling cars. And you don't have full self-driving anymore. It's supervised driving. So yeah, they've sort of admitted that it doesn't necessarily work. So I don't. I just think it's kind of dumb. It's a dumb response. I'm short from it, from this much higher. I did cover some at, you know, around 140 before earnings, because I thought both bulls and bears were scared going into this number. It was sort of too obvious that it could bounce, and it has. So I've laid more stock out short, and I'll stay short. It's pretty simple. I don't believe into Elon Musk's, you know, hopes and dreams, because he's a classic BSer.
Tommy, tell us what you really think, man. Don't hold
back. I will. I he's a wonderful guy. No, I'm just kidding. I don't really care about Elon Musk. I think he just talks his talk, and that's him, and that's how he operates, and it is what it is. But I look at fundamentals. I live in reality of what's really happening with the company. I study the balance sheet. I study the deliveries. I just read a report today from Troy Teslike, who's a very well-known analyst that looks at stuff. I guess you could say the percentage of cars that Tesla has sold globally has decreased for EVs. So they've lost share in EVs globally in the last year. That's not good.
I mean, well, that could just be expanding base, right? Expanded deployed fleet. By the way, Tom, when you talk about the bear case, you're incredibly compelling on this. Conversely, I would say over the weekend, I got into a back of a Tesla cab with my girlfriend, and driving down Park Avenue at about 35 miles an hour, the driver goes, "Oh, and check this out," puts his hands up as we're driving down the road. It's a cool experience, right? I mean, whatever the sort of the pitch is around the financials, totally different story. But my gosh, the user experience inside that vehicle is pretty incredible.
Yeah, look, there are a lot of car companies that offer a very similar product that does the same thing. It's level two, and level two is not level four, which is where full autonomy occurs. Yeah. They've had this in beta since 2016, and Elon right. Musk has claimed that it's coming and it's going to be feature complete next year for the last, you know, 8 years. So I'll be more than happy to say, wonderful, you figured it out, but they haven't. And I don't think it's going to happen with the current cars that they have with just cameras. They need more technology on there. And maybe the next generation of cars will have that. I mean, I have a bull case of what I would do for Tesla if I could say, oh, I'm going to go restructure. I'd get rid of the Cybertruck because that's dumb and it's not selling. I'd come out with a truck that looks more conventional, like a Tesla, easier to build, different colors. I mean, come on, stainless steel is hard to, you know, to produce. And just radically revamp the current lineup, the 3, the Y, the S, the X, come out with more revamped than bumpers and make those cars better. You'll sell more if they're better, not necessarily cheaper, better.
I would give up 6 months' pay to host a debate between you and Elon Musk here on Real Vision.
No, I would never do that. The reason I wouldn't is because I totally accept the way that the cult is with Tesla, and people that are Tesla fanatics are just hell bent on the whole dream. And I get that. That's fine. And I respect that. That's fine. If you want to believe that, that's fine. I just look at fundamentals and I look at what's happening within the business and how things progress and what things have been said versus what's been delivered. So that's kind of how I see things. And, but no, I don't really care to, you know, debate him. He's too smart for himself and myself.
It's always a fantastic conversation when I get to do this with you. As we come up here, we're a little past half past the hour. Final thoughts, key takeaways that you'd like to leave our viewers and our listeners with from this conversation?
I think that higher rates are going to be They're going to weigh on the market. I think the Fed is in a really big dilemma about what they can do versus what they want to do. I think that you still have a lot of people very eager to buy stocks, and they're going to continue to buy the mega cap stocks until we see real downside or slowing of growth. And that may be something that happens later this year when year over year comparisons start to happen. So I think that that it's going to be a challenging market. There's going to be winners and losers. We've seen a lot of dispersion in April so far, winners and losers. More stocks are down in April than up, and the markets are down. So that's good. I like volatility. Creates opportunity to buy things down. Don't buy Intel like I did. But, you know, it's there's dispersion. There's ways of making money on the long and short side. And, you know, that's what we do.
Who might some winners and losers be in those varying scenarios you described, Tom?
I was short IBM, and I covered that. Short Caterpillar, I covered that.
Both at a gain.
Yeah, I did. Those are today's. I'm short a little UNP. That didn't work for me, but I had such a little tiny position. I'm long. I just bought Intel. That was, sometimes you figure out the falling knife issue. So, you know, I'm short Apple. I've been short for a while. I think their business is like Tesla. There's no growth, no new products that are really going to move the needle. I'm short Tesla.
Maybe you can wear your Apple Vision Pro behind the wheel of your Tesla Model Y while your self-driving is engaged, and you can, you know, I don't know, catch up on daily briefing.
Yeah, I'm just gonna be doing like some AI type thing while I'm doing that. Yeah, listen, the future is beautiful. It's the exponential age. You know, I live in the reality of today, and I look at fundamentals, and you know, sometimes I'm skeptical about what some people say. Notably Elon Musk. So that's, and Kathy Wood. I'm short ARK as well. That's one of my favorite shorts.
Do you want to talk about that for a few moments there?
Yeah, I'll tell you. First of all, she should spend more time trying to figure out new ideas, because she keeps churning the same ideas in her portfolio. And it would need to go up about 100 points from 44 where it is now to get back to even, and I think she should focus on that. And I think her robo-taxi thesis that was started in 2019, I think that's still, you know, difficult for anyone to believe. But you know what, I think the stock is going to go lower. You know, their biggest holdings are Tesla and Coinbase, and I'm not short Coinbase, but I think it can go lower. And in Tesla, I definitely think will go lower this year as more delivery numbers come out that are not necessarily good. Estimates are too high there. So I think she's latched on to things that are in the past. She missed Nvidia. She missed, you know, Eli Lilly, stuff that really took off. And you know, she keeps churning into, you know, some of the same stuff, you know, the Teladoc, you know, what is she doing there? Why didn't you just move on from some of these things that haven't worked and still won't work? I mean, Zoom, she's still in Zoom. And I don't understand what she's doing. So there it is. I don't understand.
Now get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. There, exactly. So please, tell me what an idiot I am for buying Intel today on all your comments. Boomer. I'm not a boomer, actually. I'm younger than a boomer.
We're the forgotten generation, Tom. Gen X.
Gen X is the forgotten generation. And we should have someone that's running for president as well, our generation. Someone competent, someone actually that has a plan.
Well, you know, maybe in 30 years or so when we're in our 80s.
Yeah, I'm voting for you. Yeah, just, oh my gosh. Anyway, it's been a week, and I'm so happy to have been here with you, Ash. And whenever we talk, I don't think about all the people that are watching and thanks for all watching, but it's just sort of like the conversation that we have, because sometimes we go over and we talk for another half hour and it's the same conversation of just complete craziness.
Tom, don't worry. We'll hear from them in the comments. They will make themselves.
I love the comments. I love them. Sometimes I respond back. Why do you have this guy on?
Tom Thornton, always one of my favorite shows, always one of my favorite guests. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening to Real Vision Daily Briefing. We'll be back tomorrow.
If you want to participate in the upside of crypto, but don't have the time or the inclination to go truly down the rabbit hole, then Real Vision Crypto might just be for you. New from Real Vision, an RV crypto subscription gets you access to a trading basket complete with risk management strategy, technical analysis updates, private Discord channel, monthly drinks online, and more. And it's led by a team of RV favorites, including Chris Bullock, Jamie Coots, Peter Pinkosoff, and more to be announced soon. So, barely have time to listen to the end of this ad, but want to take part in this crypto cycle without having to dedicate all of your time to figuring it out? Go to realvision.com/RV crypto. That's realvision.com/RV crypto to see if RV crypto is the right fit for you.